You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on WJFF.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
Okay. The show is Like Mother, Like Son?
Yes. That's right, with
really?
The question mark.
With a question mark.
You know, it's a mother-son thing.
Turn and face the strain to changes. You want to be a richer man.
Tonight you're listening to Like Mother, Like Son, and that's my son, Ramsey Adams.
And that's my mother, Patricia Adams.
And we're talking tonight with Jean Marzullo, the award-winning author of over 100 books, including the best-selling I Spy books and the Shauna Show books.
So, Jean, I Spy is a phenomenon. And you created it, right? You're the creator?
Well, I started it. I'm the author, and we really co-created it. What happened was I was editor of a kindergarten magazine at Scholastic, and I loved that, and I did that for over 20 years. And one day, and we didn't use that much photography, but one day in my mailbox, there was this fabulous photograph of that looks like I Spy. You would recognize it and say that's I Spy, but it wasn't I Spy. It was just this picture of all these floating objects, nails and screws and bolts and things like that, that Walter Wick, who was a freelance photographer, had made in his studio. And what happened that day, actually, for him is he was cleaning up and putting these things away. And then he, being an artist, started playing with them, made a picture, took out his camera, took a photograph, really thought it was interesting, and so did what freelancers do, which is send it to people in New York City who work on magazines and books. And he had never done anything for kids before.
So for people who don't know I Spy, people without kids maybe who are listening, what is it exactly? It's a photographs and a riddle?
Well, I always say it's a picture, it's a poem, and it's a puzzle. So that was when we made the book. But what happened before that was we were the only people who called him up to give him a job based on that photograph. And I worked with, you know, I was thinking about kindergartners. Nobody else called him. No adult thing, and he had only done things for adults. So we hired him to do some posters, and they were really great. And then the Scholastic book people said, you should do a book. So we had to figure that out, just what you're saying. We didn't really know at first, but he had done some adult gay magazines. And so there was one adult gay magazine he had figured out puzzles for. He was very, very clear about hiding things and having only one correct answer. In my work with children, I would say, well, there could be, if somebody picks the wrong thing, I would be very nice and say, well, that's very interesting. What else can you find? And he didn't want that. And that was actually very good. And then I just love rhythm and rhyme. I grew up with it. It's in my head. So I wanted the puzzle, the text, to be in rhythm and rhyme. And then we worked it out, and I always wanted it to aim for kindergarten. And that's the hard thing for people to understand, that everybody can play in the same playing field. Everybody's, the kids who are kindergartners are as good as their parents and grandparents. And
often better, I've noticed, with
often
my grandchildren.
Better. They're more flexible in their thinking, and they have, you know, if they have good eyesight, they can get it. And parents love it when their kids beat them to it because they think their kids are so smart. And so it's just...
So it's a bit of an aptitude test. Can you fail at I Spy?
It's only about visual discrimination and vocabulary. But the vocabulary is about basic, familiar things. So that's really not usually a problem. But visual discrimination is a very specific skill that kids acquire early on. And all throughout working on various I Spy books and projects and CDs and DVDs, and it's always been a problem with other people understanding that kindergarten, if you aim for five-year-olds, this will work. If you aim older, it's going to lose its purity.
That's your genius, Jean, and I've known you for a long time and watched how you've written and done and written for children, and it seems deceptively simple. I mean, what's so difficult about a button and a bow and a whatever when you look at things or when you do your rhyme? But in fact, there's nothing more discerning than a five-year-old, and there's certain rhymes and words that they will identify with and like, and you know those, and that's the reason I Spy has been so successful. But I want to ask about how you look at the picture and decide on the words, the puzzle.
We do it, people always ask that, and when I go to schools and talk to kids, I always say, you really have to think about both at the same time, and that's what happened with us. Walter doesn't want me to tell him what to put in pictures because that would be very annoying and it would interfere with his creative, you know, judgment. And I don't want him to put in things that are going to be too old or too difficult for kids to find. And I never want abstraction. I never want anything based on a knowledge base. For example, we never say, find the first president of the United States.
Right.
So we might say, find a man's face.
Right.
And it would be the face of George Washington. And then that has a nice rhyme with lace, so then I would suggest, you know, if you can put in, I'd give him some ideas for rhymes. But, you know, we have to be very flexible going back and forth.
So you would see a picture, let's just say, let's use that, and you see something, you can say, find a man's face, then you want the rhyme, and then you would say, Walter, the next time you take a picture, add a piece of lace?
Well, how does that work? No, in that picture, sometimes in the very beginning, we always would brainstorm the book, first of all, and then each picture. What's this picture going to be about? Sometimes he would go ahead and start something, and sometimes I would give him some very clear ideas at the beginning. Mostly it was just very back and forth.
Right.
But I didn't go into his studio and sit there and watch him and say, no, you have to put in a piece of lace because he might not want to.
Right.
That would really, you know, be very annoying.
How many I Spy books are there?
There are, we did seven, and then working very closely together, and we basically did those ourselves. The Scholastic editor wasn't with us in that process, because usually when you write a book, a children's book, you write the text, you sell it, they select an illustrator. I would have some say in that. And then the illustrator is always given freedom. And they don't like, they separate the writer and the illustrator because they will disagree. And so in our case, because we started working on these projects for a magazine that I was editor of, we were together. And so we were together for seven books. Then after a while, things got a little difficult on the seventh book. So then the eighth book we did going through an editor. So he would do his thing through the editor, and I would do my thing through the editor, and the poor editor had to go back and forth. And that was kind of difficult. And that, so those are the eight original ones, we call them the classics. And then there are the challenger books. Well, we found, right in the beginning, I said I wanted to have more rhyming things than what we use in the riddle. Lots and lots and lots. And my idea was the kids would be able to look at the pictures and write their own riddles to go with it. And I have a particular pattern that I want them to follow, because I think it's a very good way for kids to learn to follow patterns of rhyme. And so it turned out that kids would find things and find everything, and we have extra credit things in the back. And then they would say, you should write harder riddles, make them harder. We did everything.
Right.
So we went back, and we could reuse the photographs. They were that rich and beautiful and well done. And there would be more rhymes in there. And that's where my sons came in, because they learned how to write the riddles. And then they would take the pictures and cross out everything we had already found with a marker.
How old were they when they were working with you?
Were they
teenagers?
They were college or above.
Uh-huh.
And then they would look for new riddles, and they were very, very good at it.
You mean look at the picture and say, we can, you know, you can find these things.
Right.
That's the way they would
do
it.
So those are the challenger books. We reuse the pictures and with new riddles, and they're just as much fun as the other ones. And a lot of kids actually will pick those up if I'm sitting at a table of I Spies. They want the challengers because they just really want to be challenged. And I Spy, it's, you know, there's a lot of education built into it that people don't realize. But it's always great proof that kids want to be challenged.
Are these older kids that like the I Challenge, or anywhere from kindergarten?
Anybody up? Who can has the skills of visual discrimination.
Well, now,
even grandparents.
But you were saying that your sons collaborated with, you know, finding the objects. But you had to think about the rhythm and rhyme aspect,
right? Well, they
right?
would do that too, and they learned some of the tricks that I hadn't. So they would then write a rough draft, and then I would go over it, and we'd go over it very carefully together. That was fun.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on Radio Jeff. We'll be back with Ramsey and Patricia in just a moment. Like Mother, Like Son on Radio Jeff. Our guest today is Gene Marzola.
So, what year was the first I Spy?
I think it was 1990.
And you wrote it. At what point did you realize you had actually done something?
A bestseller.
Well, it's interesting. It's a good question, because what happens in publishing is they're publishing lots and lots and lots of books. And then books get sent out to the printer, and then you get proofs back. And it was at that stage where everybody was interested in looking at it. You know, there were people who have to check it, but then people were looking at it and looking at it. And then Scholastic realized that they actually upped the pub date and put it into bookstores earlier. And it just caught on. I mean, not right away, but pretty soon after. And then we did another one, and then we just kept doing them. And then, in a way, they did get a little harder.
Harder to kind of find new ideas or to find new things to do.
It was harder when we had conceptual ideas that went throughout the whole book.
Right, right.
When it wasn't just, let's make a beautiful, interesting picture.
When it was like I Spy School Days or I Spy...
I Spy School Days was great.
Yeah.
I Spy, my favorites are I Spy School Days, I Spy Fantasy, and I Spy Spooky Night. But Spooky Night has a concept. It's sort of a story of entering a haunted house and going through to get out. And the house at the end is like the house at the beginning, so it's sort of a circular book. It became conceptual. That was hard to...
I want to ask about, you were basically a writer, as you say, you did rhythm and rhyme, the traditional published books, but I Spy went far beyond just books, into CDs, DVDs,
right.
I mean,
right.
I don't even...
Figures.
Not exactly. But, yes... Well, right in the beginning, a mom-and-pop company called Briar Patch got the rights to develop toys, basically games, not toys, games and puzzles. And that was really, really lucky that they got it, because they were all about quality. And I loved working with them. And unfortunately, Marty Redman, the game maker, just recently passed away. It's a big loss.
Mm-hmm.
And because I always trusted her. And we could go back and forth talking about it. And she wanted to learn what I Spy was really about. And then there was, you know, how do you make a game for interactive? And those were CD-ROMs. Now they're DVDs. And that was hard at first, because the people who wanted to, who had ideas for them, you know, they would present their ideas. And I would just say no. You know, that's not right. And the hardest thing for them to get was that you have to aim for kindergarten.
Right.
They would think if you aim for kindergarten, you're not going to get the 10-year-olds. But you do.
Right.
It's just hard for people to understand who were not in the field of early childhood to understand that. Anyway, so I would have to be the heavy a lot in that process. And then there was a fantastic producer who came along who also really wanted to learn and figure it out, Susan Gargiulo. And she was just great. So those CD-ROMs are fabulous, and now the DVDs are pretty good, too.
And you, but you also worked on these with the younger generation that kind of, you know, again, I'm going back to your love of traditional books, and this was a switch to work with people who were thinking in a whole new media way.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I found that if I could teach them, they would catch, if they wanted to catch on, they caught on and they were fabulous. That wasn't a problem. They just had to be taught about how important the concrete was. And you're talking about classical books. I mean, the person who trained me in this, her name was Dorothy Cohen. She was my advisor at Scholastic. Mm-hmm. She was from Bank Street.
Did we say that you were the editor of Let's Find Out for 20 years at Scholastic?
Yeah.
And that's for kindergartners.
70s so and in the 80s. Dorothy Cohen was from Bank Street. She was a professor there. She studied with Martha Sprague Mitchell. I don't have that first name right. What is it? Lucy Sprague Mitchell. And Lucy Sprague Mitchell started Bank Street College. And you know who else she taught? Margaret Wise Brown.
Who wrote Good Night Moon.
Right. There's a real connection between Good Night Moon, which is all about concrete objects, saying goodnight to them, and I Spy. And it's that Bank Street connection. And Lucy Sprague Mitchell had all these. Dorothy Cohen was a ballet dancer. Margaret Wise Brown was a poet. She had these people sit with children and talk to them and write down the stories that the children told them. She was against fantasy. She didn't like that. She then had her students write very concrete stories for children. And so she trained me, and that really, I'm very grateful for that training because that led into my strong feelings about I Spy.
And the concrete comes out the most, and when you think about Goodnight Moon, it is, as you say, mittens, kittens. It's very real things in that book that are spoken about. No concepts, but very real objects. And that combination of sound and image there is like you, as you said, in I Spy.
The whole publishing industry seems to be in turmoil, but maybe the kids' sector isn't as tumultuous.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay.
It is in turmoil now. It's very interesting because if you have $20 to spend on a child you love, where are you going to spend it? You might buy a DVD. You know, you might buy a computer game. So it is hard. And where are you going to find the good children's books? How do you know about them? There used to be a lot of children's bookstores. They're gone, mostly. So where would you find out where the latest, best book is? You might think if you go into Barnes & Noble and you see all the books in the back in the children's section, face out, that somebody has picked them because they're the best, but that's not true.
No, it's the authors who go in there and flip their books out.
And
but it's Amazon. I mean, it's online. That's where it all is. I mean, I wouldn't buy a book in a bookstore.
But why?
Because if you go
to Amazon, how are you going to learn what the best new books are? Because all of the pictures there that's all paid for.
Right.
And Barnes & Noble, that's paid for. Those are ads like in the grocery store. So you don't have the wonderful bookstore people who ran these children's bookstores who really did know. You could ask a children's librarian. They usually do know. School teachers don't really have time to keep up with the latest. And so it's hard. It's really hard. And when you go into the big box stores, you might find them and you might not. You know, chances are
how much room in the market is there for new books? I mean, I assume the classics really cover most of the territory.
I
Spy would be a classic at this point.
A lot of the great classics you won't see around. You know, I think of Blueberries for Sale. You'll see Goodnight Moon. But the other problem is that a lot of the books are based on TV shows. So there's a lot of merchandise-based books. So that can be a problem. They can be done well. It depends. But just because you love the original doesn't mean you're going to love things based on it unless they're done with high quality.
How is Madonna's book?
You can say, you know, it's free speech radio.
That's another problem, too. A lot of the celebrities got into it. There are some that are very good. I think Jamie Lee Curtis's books are good.
Right. I forgot what I was going to say.
You had asked me before about Shanna. The Shanna Show books are about a young African-American girl. I always think of her as four. And she's she is a very active little girl, and she likes to put on shows at home. And I wrote quite a few Shanna books. They were illustrated by Shane Evans. The TV show is on Disney, Playhouse Disney. It's just terrific. I had nothing to do with it, basically, except for some preliminary phone calls. It was done by somebody who actually I had met. She's head of children's production.
You adopted the book to TV as a cartoon?
Yeah. It's actually an interstitial. It's only 5 minutes, but kids say they watch the Shanna show. But it's just that she had an early childhood background way, way back. I actually met her in the 60s, and she did a fabulous job.
Speaking of TV, movies, books, we were talking earlier about how many children today know Charlotte's Web or they know The Wizard of Oz, but not by reading E.B. White's book or by, you know, Baum's book, but by seeing the movie or the show.
I know.
And it's both good, but we were talking about what do you feel they're missing by not reading the language of these authors?
Well, I always say to kids when I go to schools, you've just got to read Charlotte's Web. You can't just watch the movie because the language in it is just perfect. So if you don't read it, you're just missing out on so much.
Yeah, there is something very particular about the reading experience that is different from the visual experience, I think, and that's what you're saying.
Definitely.
About these classic books.
Definitely.
Right.
And it's a wonderful book for parents to read to kids, too. Teachers, just take some time in the day and just read them that book.
So do you get a lot of friends and friends of friends of friends asking you to help them publish children's books?
I do, and I always give the same advice. There is a really great organization, and it's called the Society for Book Writers and Illustrators. It's located in Los Angeles, but there are chapters all around the country. They have a great national newsletter, and they have local ones. And you can just go to scbwi.org and find out about them. And they really help new writers and illustrators, because you have to learn not only how to get better at your craft, but you really have to learn about the business. It's more business now than it ever was. So you have to be very realistic about it. And a lot of people think the world is waiting for their manuscript, their story, but it's not. So you have to play the business game. You have to know the business of your business.
You're listening to Like Mother, Like Son on Radio Jeff. We'll be right back.
Now there's a flash in the distance. Storm clouds are spreading their fingers. And I can feel your resistance. Just like a cold snap lingers. And as we pause in the shadows, rain fills the empty silence. But in the back of my mind, I've seen the ending way too many times. In my jaded, jaded little song.
Was music by Rob Meany and the band Terramar from Minneapolis. Now back to our guest, Jean Marzola, with Ramsey and Patricia Adams.
So, Jean, what's next on the agenda for you? What are you working on?
I'm working on a book that I'm illustrating called 10 Little Christmas Presents, and it's really fun for me now that I've started to illustrate. I started out as a teacher, then I became an editor, then I became an author, and now I'm on my fourth career, being an illustrator.
Did you get your illustrator's license from Phoenix Online?
I love doing it. I love being able to work with the words and the pictures at the same time. And then I can print it out and take it into a classroom and test it right with kids. They can be my editors.
So is it long form, pencil, watercolor?
It's watercolor. I don't draw. I just paint. And it's just a passion for me now. I just love it.
Now, how do the kids respond? I mean, what will they say? Like, I don't like that color, or I don't like that face, or I love the way that moves, or
you know, very sincerely ask them to tell me what bores them and what they like and don't like, and they do.
Right.
Starting in kindergarten, they understand. And they give me great ideas. And sometimes, well, I did some Bible stories, and, you know, they didn't wear pants, those guys. They wore sort of tunics.
Right.
And kids would say, why are they wearing dresses?
Mm-hmm. You
know? So when does this, what's the name of the book again?
10 Little Christmas Presents. That won't be out until
Christmas. Oh,
2008.
Oh, okay.
Not right away. It takes a while, but it's just great, great fun to do that. I work with Photoshop. I watercolor, and then I bring in the pictures, and I can, oh, it's just great fun.
I do want to ask you about the books that you illustrated, which were retelling of some of the Bible stories. Just one question about that, and the difficulty, the challenge, I guess I should say, in taking some pretty violent stories, Daniel in the lion's den, and then we had Moses being left in the marshes. You know, all those Bible stories are pretty tricky.
Yeah, they are.
And just briefly, how did you translate them in a way, or interpret them, not really interpret, but translate them for children?
Well, I did some Bible stories, and I did some Greek myths. You can see them, you can see samples on my website, jeanmarzullo.com.
Spell that?
JEANMARZOLLO.com. What I did was I really studied the stories, and then I thought about children and how they would understand them, and I just made them fun as much as I
right.
could be, and very concrete. That's always what's important,
mm-hmm.
so that they could understand all the steps. And there's a lot of discussion in them, and it was great fun. And I tested them with kids. The thing about those stories is they're very, very exciting. They've lasted thousands of years,
right.
and so kids are going to be involved, and there are scary parts, but for a child, you just need to have hope in there very clearly. And there is hope, because angels will help you, God will help you.
Mm-hmm.
So the scariness is never overwhelming.
Well, that's a challenge that you met, I think, very well. These are great little books, and I've looked at them and read them and shared them with our grandchildren. One last thing I just want to comment on is, as a very successful children's book author, writer, how much time, and you've been talking about this throughout the interview, you actually spend sitting with the 5-year-olds, the 6-year-olds, and getting their response. It seems like an essential part of your art in a way.
Well, I do a lot of that, and that is unusual. Most people don't do that. A lot of people who write very, very successfully, wonderful books for kids, really write for the child that they have inside.
The child within, yeah.
And that works for
yeah.
them beautifully. But for me, I guess because I was always a teacher, I just like to be in the classroom. I like to see their eyes. I like to see when they start moving around, get restless. I like
right.
to hear their questions. And I learn from that, and that's just the way I love to do it. Now that I'm illustrating, I can really do it well, and then I can go back and fix things.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess you feel, being face-to-face with 5-6-year-olds, that you get true honesty.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah,
they tell you what they think.
They do.
Okay. And it's been a lot of fun and very interesting to talk to you tonight. And you've been listening to Like Mother, Like Son, and I'm Patricia Adams, the mother.
And I'm Ramsey Adams. And Gene, that was great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene, for joining us.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Visit us online at www.likemotherlikeson.org and let us know what you think of the show.
Good night.